Quite frankly, what you've pointed to is the big problem in the craft distilling industry right at the moment, which is a glut.
This project really is sort of a love letter to Australian wine.
We want to bring people back into rum and not scare them off.
A maritime Tassie single malt whisky felt like the right thing for the three of us to do.
In a perfect world, all the best grapes from the best vineyards would go into the hands of the best winemakers. Doesn't always happen that way.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
James Christopher of Sydney's Bricks Rum is with us again this episode, following his previous appearance back in season two. It was very early days for Bricks when we last spoke in 2018. At which time the company was relying on imported spirit for the dark rums in its range. Bricks has now come to market with a new core range of rums, fully produced here in Australia, which have superseded the imported product, and they're in beautiful packaging designed by podcast sponsor Co-Partnership. It seemed a pivotal time to sit down with James for a chat about the intervening years and some of the exciting developments at Bricks and in the Australian rum category generally as the company enters a new phase. Well, James Christopher, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having me, James.
Mate, I think we just worked out it was 5 years since we stood out the back of the distillery in Surry Hills, and I had a chat with yourself and Andrew Thomas from Thomas Wines in Hunter Valley about rum and aging rum in wine casks. And it's really cool just to now see that we've all been around for long enough to see these spirits finally come to light. So what does it feel like for you guys to sort of reach this next phase?
Yeah, it was a bit of a milestone actually to register actually that it was 5 years ago that we were talking. So to now realise that, it's sort of blown my mind a bit. But it was 5 years ago, we were standing out the back there with Tomo, we were doing a wine lunch at Bricks, and we just started. I think we only had about 6 or 8 barrels of rum at that stage in the building. And we'd just filled up some of Tomo's wine barrels with Bricks rum. And those are now the barrels that we've only just started to decant of our own product four or five years later. So it's very exciting. It's amazing to have that realization that we've actually got liquid ready to go now, which is great.
How has the product evolved in that time? Because I think I remember talking at that time and we were sort of saying there wasn't really a previous example of anyone doing in Australia what you guys were doing with the wine barrels. Maybe tell me a little bit about what you've learned over the last few years as you've kind of tasted along the way and in terms of defining, you know, like your house style and that type of thing.
Yeah, I think in those earlier days, there was a lot of experimentation and trial and error. It probably wasn't until 2 years in after starting Bricks that we actually decided that the wine barrels was going to be our angle. We had sourced a whole bunch of different barrels from all over the place, beer barrels and bourbon barrels and whiskey barrels and a whole bunch of wine barrels. But the way we saw the wine barrels progressing over that initial couple of years was just something very unique, something very different, and something that we really thought we could latch onto as a brand and develop our own style and use that style to help reshape the conversation around Australian rum as a point of difference, purposely to show that rum can be different to what people think rum is, if that makes sense. People's energy and perception around rum hasn't always been that positive. So in our sort of mission to do that, we wanted to create a different style and really define ourselves differently to what was in the market at that time and now. And so now we're just starting to see the fruits of that labour come through, and they're really great results, and we're really loving what's coming out of the barrel, you know, 4 or 5 years later. And now we've put more energy into that wine barrel maturation program. There's going to be some fantastic stuff coming out of our barrels in the next couple of years. So yeah, really excited to see what happens in that world. Yeah.
And obviously, as I said, yeah, Thomas Wines and Broken Wood were a couple of the wineries that we were seeing you fill into their barrels then. Can you give us any colour around who you're kind of working with and, you know, whether are these all going to just be blended into your vatted releases, or are we potentially going to see some kind of expressions of those wineries released individually?
We'll definitely see some expressions of those wineries. We actually have put out one of our select cast series rums, which is a blend of the Thomas and Broken Wood Shiraz cask wines. Then it's been aged for a couple of years in their barrels, blended together, and then finished in a tawny port cask barrel, which has been a fantastic product for us over the last few months. It's almost run out now, but it's been a really unique expression. That's sort of more in our premium selection, but
yeah, I didn't hear about that one. I know about the stout cask, which I did get to taste and was impressed by.
Stout cask was the first release. The second we called our tawny finish, and we did call out Thomas and Brokenwood in sort of the marketing, but we really focused on the tawny side of things with the marketing and conversation piece around that product, just because it was so reflective of that beautiful, rich dried fruits and raisins and prunes and plums coming out of that tawny cask. It was only in there for, I think, 2 or 3 months, and it just pulled this beautiful flavour out. But we will, moving forward, definitely be utilising those winery names and barrels. Those guys, you know, work for years keeping those barrels in tip-top shape, and they do inject a lot of flavour into the barrel for us in ageing their wines and maturing their wines. So we want to call out the work that's been put into the wine side of things and help tell the story of why our rum tastes the way it does because of the flavour that's been put into those barrels from the wine. So definitely utilising the winery's name and reputations to talk about our products, for sure. We'll release some great stuff.
What about like going upstream from that, you know, in terms of raw materials and distilling and fermentation practices? Has that kind of been pretty much fixed from the beginning, or are you constantly playing around in that area as well?
Well, now we have our core range of products out. That's sort of a fixed recipe. So we source the molasses from Bundaberg Sugar Refinery. We have our yeast profile. We have our distillation style, which we utilize a blend of pot and column distillation styles. So that, for our core range, is sort of set. But moving forward, once again, all about, you know, changing the face of rum and showing different styles. We want to play around with different yeast profiles, different types of molasses, obviously different barrel types. And we have started to play with matching the barrel type that we have to the liquid that we have produced. So actually going back to the drawing board, once we have some barrels that we know that we're going to get our hands on, going back to the drawing board with the recipe and trying to sort of match up the profile of the rum that goes into the barrel to suit that particular barrel. If it's a beer barrel, for instance, we might go back, we have been going back and playing around with beer yeasts and different types of yeasts to then develop the flavour to highlight and accentuate the barrel and maturation style, so that it all ties together in one story at the end of the piece when the liquid's in the bottle.
And in terms of like the style of rum that you want to make, how do you kind of reverse engineer that from when you want to produce a more approachable style of rum that's going to be for broad appeal rather than just a small audience of rum fiends? What are the things that you're not looking for, if you know what I mean? What are you trying not to be? How do you kind of reverse engineer that with the way that you produce it?
Yeah, I guess the concept we came into this was that we want to bring people back into rum and not scare them off. So we didn't want to create massive, big, bold flavours and high ester rums and really polarising, unique flavours.
Do you like those really weird and wonderful extreme rums yourself?
As a rum lover, yes. And there are rum lovers out there and there are some great rums around the country being produced in that style that are really showcasing esters and different types of yeast profiles and really trying to create punchier flavours with dunderpits and really working with those.
What?
Dunderpit. A dunderpit is, that's a whole other story. But really leaning into those weird and wacky, bolder flavours and aromas. I guess what we're trying to do, and we will have those come out in future, but at the moment what we're trying to do is establish ourselves as an approachable rum brand and something that you can really appreciate and love to drink. Not something that you would take to a party and sort of scare people away with. We're trying to change the mindset and bring people back over to rum who might have been scared off in their younger days or back in the rum and coke days. They might have had too many of them and they have this mindset that they don't want to go back to rum. We're trying to just get people to think a bit differently and come back to rum to rediscover it. In that regard, make our rums approachable full-flavoured and bold, yes, but approachable and soft and sippable and mixable and drinkable so that it's flexible across a variety of different uses.
Yeah, and did that also involve putting the rums to practice in cocktails and that kind of stuff as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's mostly what happens at our Surry Hills distillery and bar. That's where the guys really get to play around with the end products and develop ways to drink the rums in cocktails, mixers, neat, ice, whatever it might be. We're trying to provide versatility across even our white rum. You know, we want to show really different ways to think about white rum. It's not just about the mojito. We want to show different flavour profiles that you can team up with white rum so that you can, you know, use it across a variety of different settings. And that's what happens at the Surry Hills bar. The guys get to play around and really showcase and, yeah, play with the flavours that are built into the rums by the distillers.
It's probably pretty early days yet, but I mean, tell me about the reception that you've had so far. Do you feel like you've got some interest out in amongst consumers and in trade as well?
Yeah, definitely. From the time we started almost 5 years ago till now, the conversation around rum has changed quite a lot, especially with the consumer. I mean, rum's always been quite prominent with bartenders. Bartenders love rum. It's just the consumer that has not yet fully come around to it. But in the last, mainly the last probably 3 years, I'd say, there's been a big shift to people looking to discover new drinks, looking outside of gin and whiskey for new experiences. And yeah, it's been a big uptake in the rum category. We're starting to see trends flow through from the US and through Europe as well. And obviously Australia is always a couple of years lagging, but the upturn in the rum category over there is really starting to take effect, and we're starting to see a lot more Australian rum distilleries opening up now, little craft places making rum, which is really great for educating the consumer and getting people to discover new ways of drinking rum and new styles of drinking rum, especially the local stuff, which is great. Yeah.
I'm impressed that you guys held your nerve as well and that you've never released anything other than rum or cane spirit. Was there ever conversations amongst the founders of, you know, should we diversify or, you know, are we putting all our eggs in this one basket that might be a little bit risky? Is that a conversation that ever kind of came up?
Yep, definitely. Definitely. Early on, there was many conversations about that. We've sort of found our line now. We're really making a beeline only for rum. We're really set and really proud of what we've achieved doing that. But definitely early on, there was conversations around, should we make gin? Should we make vodka? You know, what can we do to help pay the bills? How can we get stuff out quicker? But we decided that we set out to be a rum distillery and we set out to essentially change the face of Australian rum and only focus on the one thing. And it was going to be hard for the first couple of years, but now we're at a point where we have a whole bunch of aged stock ready to go. We have a great national distribution agreement signed. We have enough product to get around the country now. And we're really happy with where we are now. Obviously, first couple of years was tough, and throw COVID in there and closing down our cellar door. And at that time, essentially all of our wholesale customers were on premise, so that all shut down as well. So a few tough times in there, but we're really proud and really happy with sticking to our guns and not muddying the waters of our messaging from day one, which was to be solely a rum distillery.
The other thing that I think is going to really help with getting traction with consumers as well is the price point. You know, like I think you can refresh my memory of what the rums are priced at, but from memory they're very accessible.
Yeah, the new range now, which is our new cane spirit, our new Australian rum and the new spice rum, they're all retail at $80. So they're all very much aligned with the Australian craft market. I think it's great value for money for the amount of effort and time and love that goes into the products. And yeah, exactly what we're trying to do is to make them approachable and attainable. We don't want to create this great product and not have the ability for people to buy it. We want to have it accessible to everyone to utilise, barbies and parties and gifting and you know, just sharing with their mates. We want that to be an ongoing purchase, not just a one-off special buy. Same thing again. We will put out some more premium releases, more single barrel, single batch stuff. But our core range, definitely we wanted to be accessible and approachable so that, you know, people can enjoy them for sure.
You've just been telling me today about you've got some pretty serious stocks of rum now aging and a couple of different facilities, plans to ultimately open a bigger distillery. How have you managed to fund it along the way?
Our initial days were funded just by the three founders ourselves. We've done a few small fundraisers along the way with family and friends and a few key investors that have helped us grow and get to where we are now. And currently going through a bit of a larger raise to accelerate growth and invest more in the company itself, in laying down more barrels of rum to appeal and to appease the future growth in the category. We have to think about that now so that in 3-4 years' time we're not left high and dry, but also to invest in a larger production plant a little bit later down the track so we can bring everything in-house under one roof and not have all these. We have a few little satellite warehouses here and there that we station all our maturation programs at, but we want to bring everything in-house and have the ability to upscale our production so we can meet demand. So that will be happening, you know, that we're in the middle of that raise now, and that's a bit of a process obviously, but.
Is that challenging in the current environment as well?
Yeah, it is. It is challenging. It's, you know, everyone's doing it a bit tougher than what they may have done over the past few years, but it's just about finding that right investor and the right investor that understands that this is a longer game. It's a longer investment. It's not a quick turnaround. It's about, you know, showing people how the market works. And I guess likening it to the whiskey industry in the fact that you put a drop of liquid in a barrel now, and it from now until the time that it gets bottled, it is an ever increasing asset in value. So it's just a matter of helping potential investors understand that. Once you can get their heads around that, then they can understand that it might be something that might be worth for them to invest in. But yeah, just about finding that right person. Yeah, it's an interesting process. It's a hard market at the moment, but we're chugging along and we seem to be doing quite well. So pretty happy with where it's at. But obviously we want to close out the round and start to invest into the product and production and upping our game in that regard. So like I said, so we have enough to sell in the next couple of years. We don't run out.
At the launch event, there were a couple of faces that were familiar to me from my last decade or so in the drinks industry. Tim Salt, formerly of Diageo, and Jeff Krieger of Brokenwood Wines. What was their involvement with the project?
Yeah, look, we've been really lucky to come across some great industry people to help us on our journey. Jeff Krieger from Brokenwood Wines sits on our board. He's the chairman of our board, so he helps to steer the ship essentially and to help guide us through the growth and through the workings of the industry. He's had, I won't say how many years because it'll give his age away, but many years of experience in the world of wine and knowing the market out there and how the booze world works. And then Tim, obviously, same regard, much more in the spirits world, but some great experience with those two guys on board to help guide us in an area that we are still learning about moving forward. But as we grow, we are taking it all in, and with the help of those guys, we're really appreciative and really happy with having the ability to lean on some strong minds to bounce stuff off, to ask questions, ifs, whats, whys, hows, all that sort of stuff. That as we grow and build the brand, it's great to have those people there to sort of help steer the ship, as I said.
And what sort of knowledge can you glean from them? Like, does it tend to be more business strategy type stuff? You know, does it run the full gamut of like sales, marketing, in Tim's case, maybe category expertise, all of these sorts of things?
Exactly that. With Jeff, a lot of great in-market experience as well. So he's very hands-on with Brokenwood. He's out and about in the coalface and he's out at their events and he's in the market talking to his customers and really understands the market very well. So especially the retail world, he's very, very good at leaning on for that world. And then Tim, in the spirits category and the strategy piece, really planning forward, looking to where we want to be in the next two, three, five, 10 years, and working towards those goals. And the minds, and the experience that those guys have is well beyond our years. And hopefully one day we'll get to that level. But yeah, it's very much about leaning on them for developing strategy and planning for the future, for sure.
And you mentioned the distribution arrangement that you've entered into with South Trade, which is great news. Tell me about that process. Like, you probably would have had a chat to a few different people, presumably, and what was the appetite in the market from distribution partners, you know, to work with you guys who are sort of, you know, pioneering a new category in a way?
The way that came about is really interesting. It's actually wasn't so much either of us, South Trade or Bricks, approaching or asking. It was just sort of, we met along the way and we kept in touch in our early days, and we met some of the South Trade guys just through the industry and just sort of kept in touch with some of the team over there. And then as we grew, we knew that at some stage, for us to achieve what we were trying to achieve, we were going to need a national distributor, because we were a team we had four sales reps and we had commission agents around the country, but there was no one really dedicated and focused to getting our product out into the world except the people that were under the Bricks banner, and we were all based in Sydney, so it was very hard for us to work the product around the country. But we knew as we grew that we wanted to take on a national distribution setting, and that really came about through meeting the South Trade guys and just keeping in touch with them over time and chatting away and how's it all going and what's the industry doing, and until it got to a point where both sides of the conversation felt that Australian rum was starting to really make a headway, and we came together again and started to talk a bit more seriously about how that would look. South Trade has done amazing things with young Australian brands. They've taken Starwood from the beginning of their growth journey. They've got Poor Tom's under their belt. They've had experience with Mr. Black and 666 Vodka and some great Australian brands that have come through the South Trade ranks. And we see that as a great piece of evidence that they can help to grow brands. And so we're really excited to have that conversation and very, I guess, humbled as well, because honestly, we didn't think it would happen so soon. And we found out along the way, by speaking to other distributors, we were always too young. We were too small, too young, and we didn't have enough product. So probably the last 12 to 18 months, we've really focused on putting a lot of product into barrel and making sure we have enough liquid to satisfy what a distributor can do with a product. We don't want to, you know, sign up on a national distribution level and then, you know, 6 months later run out of stock. We want to have the stock there available. So the past 18 months, we've put a lot of work into laying down barrel after barrel after barrel on an ongoing basis, really focused on that so that we can be prepared for what's to come in the next couple of years and have the stock there to grow the brand. Obviously, the time frame, there's a 2-year minimum legally for aging rum, but for the quality side of things, you do want to let it go longer. So it's a process to go through before you can pull a drop of liquid out of a barrel that's ready to go into bottle. And we wanted to make sure we were ahead of the game in that regard so that we could commit to the levels of liquid required by South Trade to grow the brand efficiently. We didn't want to run out. We didn't want to dilute our product in quality so that we had more quantity. We wanted to really focus on having enough good quality rum to go to market and really make an impact and show people what good quality rum can be. So yeah, bit of a process, but it was a great coming together of something that South Trade saw a fantastic opportunity for an Australian rum to be in their portfolio, and we by chance had a great encounter with them and it led to us being in their portfolio and having the opportunity to grow the brand in that regard, going from, like I said, a team of 4 or 5 people to having 50 South Trade reps around the country repping our brand, which is just a great opportunity and something we're very appreciative for.
You must have that still working hard. Yeah. Have you had to utilise maybe some contract production to kind of supplement that a little bit?
Yes, we have. We've Molly, our beautiful 2,000 litre copper still that sits over at Surry Hills, works day and night, no doubt about it. But obviously in order to create that growth, we have contract distilled a portion of our liquid. It's all done under our watch. It's with our ingredients. It's just at a bigger facility that can produce more spirit. So it is all done to our recipe and to our specs. It comes back to our warehouse as an unaged product and we treat it from there onwards. So it's just the actual distillation piece that we're missing at the moment, which is why we want to grow into a bigger facility moving forward. So that's what we're going through at the moment, the challenges of growth and not being quite big enough yet to invest in, you know, a huge factory style setup. We're in that in-between phase where a lot of brands find themselves in. A lot of beers are contract distills, wines are subbed out. And spirits are subbed out as well, just to create that extra piece of scale. So that's what the growth piece is, and that's what the next step for us will be, to move into a facility where we can have everything under one roof and produce all of our liquid under the one roof and capitalise on those scalable products and bring our cost of goods down to a point where we can, you know, make it worthwhile eventually.
Is that a unnamed contract partner or...?
Unnamed,
unfortunately.
Okay, yep.
Fair enough. Got to ask the question.
Yep.
No worries. What about, you know, like looking at the rum category generally, you know, what's kind of changed in the last 5 years? You sound like you've got a bit of a spring in your step, that you're seeing some positive signs about rum at the moment. There's still some very challenging laws in this country. Have you had any feel from whether there's any traction with maybe getting the gatekeepers in government to sort of take any interest in changing some of that legislation, and just maybe give us some insight into the category generally?
Yeah, well, the category itself is in growth. I think I saw a stat the other day that rum sales last year surpassed whiskey sales in the UK, which is an amazing sign of growth. But essentially in Australia, what we're seeing now is a lot more distilleries turning towards a little bit focus onto rum. There is a number of rum focused craft distilleries that are opening up as well and producing great product all around the country. I think every state now has a rum focused distillery. I think maybe except the NT, but every state has at least one rum focused craft distillery. Even Tassie, the new Norfolk guys down there, they're doing great things.
How many distilleries would there be now making rum in Australia?
Look, rum-focused distilleries is probably about 10 to 15 scattered around the country. But like you said, there's other distilleries that are seeing the rum category grow now and they're starting to diversify a bit. Distilleries that have been making whiskey or gin that are starting to make some rum, which is a really good sign as well. The gin market is quite heavily flooded and the consumer is starting to look for different things. Same with the whiskey category. Australian whiskey category is still obviously booming, but the whiskey guys understand the rum process, so they like to sort of play around with the same style of fermentation and maturation. It's a bit harder to work with molasses than it is with a grain, but it's a bit messier, I would say. We are seeing a lot more Australian craft rums come onto the market for sure. The category in Australia, definitely, like I said, from 5 years ago to now has changed. We were getting, I would say, nothing short of heavy pushback when we first started, as in the majority of people we'd come across were, you know, shaking their head to rum and no thanks, not for me. You know, I drank too much when I was younger or just have that image of just no thanks. But just as the consumers become more educated over the past couple of years and they're looking for different things, the category is opening up and more people are looking to try.
People are more open-minded,
definitely,
I think.
Definitely. Yeah. I think probably not the only factor, but the COVID time we had, people at home and discovering new things and trying new cocktails and learning about different ways to drink and a lot of sort of online interaction and retail interaction, people have discovered new ways of expressing rum and with the backup of the style of products that are coming out now, it's really starting to turn heads and change people's perceptions of what rum is in Australia. And, you know, there's a group of great rum producers around Australia that are only focused on quality. No one's trying to rubbish rum. We're all trying to keep a standard. We all get together and chat all things rum, and we all sort of bounce stuff off each other. We're great, all great mates, and it's a great little industry to be a part of. But the underlying theme that we're all trying to achieve is around quality and presenting Australian rum in a positive light, because the opportunity is there to just grab this category and completely turn it on its head, the same way that gin did 10 or 15, 20 years ago, from turning gin into, you know, grandma's drink into the cool new thing to do. So
you guys are like the four pillars of rum, hopefully.
I would one day hope to think so. maybe. We'll see what happens.
I was also asking you just about the regulatory situation with rum. How much of a barrier do you see that as being just around not being able to call your unaged cane spirit rum, even though part of it is aged? And maybe you can just touch on why you did that too.
In our cane spirit, we now have 30% of that product being aged and charcoal filtered rum, which takes the colour out of it, so it stays clear.
What are the reasons for taking the colour out of it? Is it purely because people who want a white rum, like they don't want something that's going to have a bit of coloration to it?
Definitely, it's the presentation of the product and what it's used for. So cocktails and mixes, and generally the white rum category is your lighter style cocktails, so you want to try and keep it nice and clean. But traditionally, white rum is not aged, and in Australia, we are stuck with this two-year maturation law, where, like you said, you cannot call it or label it rum until it's aged for 2 years, which essentially colours it and changes the flavour of it, which is a strange concept to try and produce a white rum in then filtering out a lot of the colour, and also taking in that filtration process, you take a lot of the flavour out that you've developed in the maturation process. But in the maturation process, by default, you're also filtering out a lot of those bold, punchy flavours that white, unaged white rums hold. So you're changing the makeup completely in the flavour profile of the rum. So we had a product called Brix White, which was our unaged product that was prior to this recent relaunch. The reason for developing a bit of a blended product was to show ingenuity, I guess, or creativity, innovation in developing a new style of white rum. Obviously not being able to be called rum, still has to be called cane spirit.
30% of it could be called rum, but the other
30% of it
can't.
Could be called rum because it is aged, yeah.
You don't want to, I mean, it'd be a really bad financial decision to be stripping out the colour of 100% of it.
All that time and all that effort and all that time in barrel. But like I said, it does change the flavour makeup of it as well. So we wanted to progress from Brix White with this new rebrand. We wanted to progress from Brix White and show a step in our rum style. And the adding the aged product in there just adds a bit of depth of flavour, rounds out the sort of stiffer edges of the unaged spirit and really softens it down a little bit. So it does make it more approachable on a sipping level or on a rocks level. But it adds a bit of depth of flavour in there as well. With the oak impact, it adds a bit more length into the unaged product. So you're blending back into the completely unaged product. By default, you then have to call it back to being cane spirit, like you said. The two-year rule does create a barrier to entry for newcomers into the market. Clearly for us, it was a huge barrier to entry in only having Brix White available on the market and then having to import rum to independently bottle under our own label from international sources. We could only produce an unaged product and we couldn't even call it rum. When we first started, for the first couple of years, we didn't even have our own rum, and we were trying to
a complex story that you had to tell people.
Yeah, like, as a rum distillery.
When you're doing a tasting or a...
Correct.
It's just like a difficult story to tell, I suppose.
It's a hard one to navigate. So it does complicate things when coming into the market. But the other thing it does, it confuses the consumer, because they see all these products on the shelf that are called all different things. You know, ours is called cane spirit, but there's other products in the market called silver or...
Rum with an H or
rum with an
like
H
that.
Is a bit of a cheeky one, yeah. But there's other... Everyone's just calling... there's no real classification for what unaged white rum or cane spirit is. So it's a bit confusing for all involved, and you're not always there to handhold at the bottle shop to explain to people what's going on there, because they'll see a bottle of Bacardi who do age their product and then filter the colour out of it and bring it into the country as rum. They obviously have the scale and the time in market to be able to do that. But for us younger, smaller brands, we don't have the ability to do that. We do find it a bit challenging for the consumer to navigate what our product is. But moving forward, back to your question about changing the law and if there's any hope there, obviously hope is a key word, but there is a bit of a movement at the moment. We're getting...
Are you guys members of the ADA and pushing them on that?
Yeah, we're getting some really good support. The ADA have set up a technical standards committee recently, which is opening up that conversation around defining what unaged rum or cane spirit is. So we're starting to enter the conversation more recently about trying to have industry input into defining what our products are. Whether that turns into a government lobby or some sort of petition to change the aging law, that's sort of yet to be discovered. But I think essentially the crux of that law, this is 1901, so it's, 123-year-old law that we're dealing with here.
It's not really made for the craft beverages boom in the early 2000s.
It's definitely not relevant to today's world. Yeah. It was brought in at a time when there was really no sort of industry there. It was just sort of make what you want and sell what you can, especially a lot of under the cover of darkness production being made and basement stuff and bathtub stuff. And I think essentially the law was brought in to streamline that and knock a lot of the poor quality producers out of the market. But like you said, the industry now has changed a lot. It's not that way anymore. As we spoke about before, no one's trying to create dodgy under the counter products. It's too hard. You wouldn't bother doing that anymore. The consumer is way too knowledgeable, and they'll fish out a shitty product, the click of a finger. So they won't go and buy those products. They want quality and they want high standards, and it's up to us as the industry to produce our rums and whiskies and brandies at a standard that is quality enough to present to the market and be sustainable in the market. No one wants to produce rough products. Everyone's trying to produce great stuff. And if we can all come together and agree on that, which we essentially all do, I think that's the first step in trying to define things like white rum and have a standard or some sort of set of rules or guidelines as to what Australian white rum is, or even what Australian cane spirit is. So we can then band together, call our product one particular thing across the whole market, and then the consumer starts to see many different, they might see five or six Australian cane spirits on the shelf next to a bottle of Bacardi and understand what's going on there. Whereas at the moment, it's just all a bit, I wouldn't say it's cowboy-like. It's just sort of, everyone just is sort of flying their own flag.
It's a bit of a rabble, in terms of the way that the category's kind of presented.
There's no definition there, which is what we're trying to solve.
Cool. I guess the most important thing is, where can people find it? Obviously direct from your website, but has the new range already sort of made its way out into any of the major retail chains yet?
Yeah, it's slowly making its way around the country with the South Trade team. I think in the next couple of months we'll start to see some ranging in the bigger chains, and definitely dotted around the independents and the smaller banner groups around the country. That's already started to happen. But yeah, I think the second half of this year is really going to be quite strong for us in that regard. So yeah, very excited for what's to come for Bricks.
Awesome, James. Well, thanks for coming by, and really impressed with how everything's kind of unfolded over the last few years, impressed with the rums, and can't wait to kind of see what happens next.
Thanks, James, and all I'll say is to people out there to go out and pick up a bottle of Australian rum next time you're in the bottle shop and give it a try.